The following program was produced by an independent community producer. The opinions expressed do not necessarily reflect those of the ECAT staff or board of directors.
Giving a voice to the voiceless, pulling stories out of the shadows and putting them under the spotlight, making sure that each person is valued and cared for. This is Humanity First with Peter Evers, presented by BAMSI.
Hi, everybody. This is Peter Evers with another edition of Humanity First. Today, we're going to talk about the big picture of immigration. We've talked in the past about what our communities can do to welcome people. But what is it about this issue that gets everybody riled up? What is it about this issue that makes politicians turn away from the good of the country towards their own interests? It seems to happen time and time again. We've had 40 years of immigration reform, which really haven't resulted in anything that helps us move forward. This is a country of immigrants. This is a country of different opinions, of diversity, that has made this the economic block that essentially runs the world. And yet we still fight over the issue of immigration when the majority of us, the vast majority of us, actually came to America through that exact route. And those people who actually are native to this country have suffered at the hands of those immigrants. We're going to talk about that with Dean Spilotas from Southern New Hampshire University, who's been on the show before, and he'll be with us when we get back for the second segment. So we'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Jamie. I'm an essential worker here at BAMSI, and I'm a nurse. Nurses are essential here at BAMSI because as nurses, we really have the opportunity to make an impact. We have very small ratios, so we have the opportunity to really learn everything about the person served and be able to give the best care. It really serves such a great purpose for me as being a nurse and really why I came into nursing. Learn more about nursing opportunities at BAMSIjobs.org.
Giving a voice to the voiceless, pulling stories out of the shadows and putting them under the spotlight, making sure that each person is valued and cared for. This is Humanity First with Peter Evers, presented by BAMSI.
Welcome back, everybody, to Humanity First. And as promised earlier in the segment, Dean Spilotas is with us again from SNHU. Dean, welcome. Thank you so much for coming back on the program. Believe it or not, you were with us in December.
That's right.
This is last year. It seems 5 minutes ago. And we.
That's amazing. Time is just flying by.
Yeah. And when you look about it, because I think we were talking about the election, about what was
primary,
going, the primary, and we've moved on from that. And it's, you know, we seem to have got what nobody in America wanted, which was a rematch of the last time, which is, you know, it continues to be one of those things, which is a major head scratcher for me in terms of how did we get this? And I think I mentioned to you before, when I first came to this country, my, my wife's father. Father-in-law. Why can't I hear? He said, well, you know, America and pretty much every country gets the president that they deserve. And I remember thinking as a 28-year-old, what's he talking about? Now I think I know.
Yeah, well, the general election is going to be here before you know it. It'll be September and we'll be just a few months out.
Yeah, I know. And, you know, one of the things I'd like to talk about, Dean, if that's all right, is the immigration issue, which might actually be one of those determining factors. You know, of course, there are, you know, a number of things that could happen between now and November, which will blow it out the water. It's kind of interesting that there are people maybe on the right wing who believe that there's some sort of conspiracy. Surprise, surprise, that that Biden will be replaced by somebody. And I've been reading a lot about that. And I find that kind of amusing. I mean, maybe it's going to happen, but I don't think there's a lot of evidence for that. But I think there's a couple of things that he's worried about, right? So he's obviously worried about the issue of Israel and Palestine, which is a conversation for another day and just such a hot topic. But the other one is the border. The other one is how he is being portrayed in terms of him being weak on immigration, whatever that means. In fact, his guy is about to be impeached, I think, for the second time. And that's really how important the Republicans think this is, the outcome of the election. But I suppose it goes back an awful lot further than that. Certainly, 40 years ago, Ronald Reagan sort of took on immigration reform in a way that he gave great fanfare to. And yet we're still here and we're still dealing with this. And I guess there's a couple of big policy questions. And, you know, we've talked in another episode about how local communities deal with this. But the why, I think, is something that we don't talk about too much. We see thousands of people coming over the border. 60 Minutes does a big show on it, and there's a hole in the fence and people are coming through. But from a policy standpoint, from a political standpoint, is there a real will to actually fix this issue? Or is there more of a will to blame the other side for their role in the fact that that we are subject to a lot of people coming into the country at the moment?
Mm-hmm. Well, as is true with most things in politics, it's probably a little bit of each. I do think there is a will to get some things done. The problem is agreeing on what exactly the nature of those things are. There are just real differences between Republicans and Democrats about how you solve this issue, about how you improve the circumstances for people who are in here waiting, perhaps awaiting an asylum hearing, or who are being acclimated for the short term in the United States, how they got here, why they're here, et cetera. There's just real disagreement about that. And it also, it is a useful political tool in some respects. And, you know, we're in the political season now. It's a presidential election year. Our best chance for some kind of reform seemed to go out the window a few months ago when, Republicans negotiated what looked like a very good, fairly comprehensive deal on immigration, had a lot of the things that Republicans like and very few things that Democrats like, yet Joe Biden, Democrats were largely willing to pass it, and Joe Biden was willing to sign it. And then Donald Trump decided he'd prefer to have it as an election year issue, saying that you need a perfect bill. Now, there's no such thing as a perfect bill, but for whatever reason, he wanted it for political reasons. And you basically saw all of his party in Congress fall in line behind him. We've been here before. I remember many years ago, Ted Kennedy and John McCain were going to get together and solve the immigration crisis with a comprehensive reform package. That fell through. I remember when Marco Rubio, the senator from Florida, was first elected to the U.S. Senate, he was going to be this fresh new voice on immigration. He was going to solve it. That never ended up working out. And here we are again. You know, this package was not a comprehensive package. It had nothing about a pathway to citizenship or the Dreamers, who were brought here as children. None of that. It was all really about more judges to speed up the asylum hearing process, more money for immigration and border patrols, et cetera. So it was a pretty good looking package for Republicans. But again, we're in a political year. So, you know, I think there is some will to do something, but it's just so difficult to have any real agreement between the two parties on what exactly it is that should be done. And you know, the problem with the idea of a comprehensive package is there are so many different elements to it that everybody's going to find something to dislike. Right. So one of the hopeful things about this most recent package was that it was a fairly streamlined package. And you mentioned Secretary Mayorkas of Homeland Security being impeached. They'll have a trial in the Senate. They will eventually have a trial in the Senate for him. He's not going to be removed. And the Democrats argue that this is a policy disagreement. It's not a sign of any particular high crimes and misdemeanors.
Which is, if we could just focus on that for a minute, Dean, and go back to that argument about, is it just too delicious to have this as to weaponize this for one side or the other? And I'm not naive enough to think that both parties do this, that a party would walk away from what everybody believes is in the best interest of the country to score a political point. Is that new? Is that something that rings down the ages in all cultures? Because it seems to me that there is probably nobody in this country who would say we don't have a problem with immigration, whatever that is, whether it's that we're detaining people too long, whether it's we're letting too many people in. You know, there's a spin on this for everybody, but it all comes back to it has to be fixed somehow, right?
Yeah, no, it's I think it's not unusual to see people think in political terms or tactical terms on how these issues might be used. You know, you saw Donald Trump for the first time in a while doing a campaign event in Grand Rapids, Michigan yesterday. And he had a podium. And I don't know if you saw the front of the podium had a sign that said Biden's border bloodbath or something to that effect. That's pretty stark imagery. But that's the kind of thing you get in an election year. And so I do think it is Trump in particular, maybe other candidates might feel differently, but I think Trump has found it very difficult to resist as a campaign issue. Democrats think that they can make something out of this, that they can take that failure in the Senate to get that package through as a way to kind of flip this around on Donald Trump. We'll see. It's just unclear. And, you know, in the meantime, Joe Biden's dealing with a lot of pressure from his left flank as well about, you know, sort of not leaning in too heavily on the enforcement aspect of things and keeping in mind that these are human beings with families and children who many are coming here seeking a better life for whatever reason, political persecution, a lack of, economic opportunity in their home countries. And remember, for a long time, it was American policy in general, and particularly among Democrats, to try to improve economic conditions in a lot of these Central American countries so that people will be more willing to stay home rather than make this perilous journey up to the border. We don't hear as much about that anymore. So, and there's this whole other narrative among some Republicans, particularly in the right wing, that what's really happening is all manner of terrorists are blending in with the families coming across the southern border. The reality is, people have a vision of all of these folks, you know, climbing fences and sneaking through holes into the country. The vast majority of them are showing up, turning themselves in, and asking for political asylum, and then they're processed and they're released into the country and await their hearings. The problem is these hearings can take years to come around. So you're effectively being, for at least some medium term, whether it's 3 years or 5 years or 8 years, being released into the country. And then you have the whole issue of, you know, should they be allowed to have work permits while they wait, those kinds of things.
Right. Driver's license and that kind
of thing. Yeah, all that sort of stuff. There's so many issues.
Yeah, you know, when we talk about civility in politics, I think something that strikes me is that there seems to be a tendency nowadays from certain political folks to not really consider the humanity issue about this. And a good example of that would be, you know, the separation of children from their parents at the border under the Trump administration. And, you know, some of those stories, when you hear them, are absolutely heart-wrenching. And yet that doesn't seem to strike a chord with somebody who lives in Kansas, for instance.
Yeah. Well, especially when a lot of these individuals are being dehumanized. I mean, Trump has used some incredibly strong language, referring to many of them as animals and subhuman. And,
right, rapists, yeah.
Somebody who is in the Midwest or wherever in the country who leans towards Trump, and they hear this stuff and they're like, well, they're, you know, I don't need to extend the same kind of dignity to them because, according to my candidate, they're animals, basically.
Right. And yet, you know, what interests me is that President Obama's unofficial nickname was the deporter in chief, right?
And so deport a lot of people, yes.
So why didn't that stick in terms of, you know, is it a Republican thing that the Republicans are sort of proud of the fact that they're deporting people, but do Democrats not put that forward? But the reality is that there isn't much difference in the way that people ended up being sort of turned out of the country.
Yeah, I mean, there's always certainly among Democrats, President Obama experienced this You get a lot of pushback from the progressive wing of the party, who were very unhappy about the level of deportation. So you have to deal with that. But I mean, there's no denying that at some level, the Biden administration kind of let this get out of hand initially, or at least has been kind of slow to deal with the volume, just the sheer volume of people coming up and asking for asylum or trying to get into the country in some way. Now, sure, it's politicized, and we already talked about all the ways in which Donald Trump is using it for political effect. But I think there's certainly blame to go around.
Yeah. Well, even the fact that that Biden won galvanized hundreds of thousands of people, right? Thinking this will be different. This will be easier, or this, you know, I have a pathway before a word was even said. So I think,
communications are very hard to control. I mean, I've read a number of stories in recent years about how the message is kind of spreading in some of these countries that now is a good time to come to the U.S., even if there's no kind of empirical basis for that. That can have a tremendous impact on somebody in a small town, in Honduras or Guatemala, who's thinking of leaving. Right. If they hear, oh, okay, you know, Joe Biden's president now, this is a better time for me to come.
That's right. And of course, you have to put into perspective of what you're leaving from. You know, are people leaving, running away from something, or they're running to something? And oftentimes they're running away from things. When you think about, you know, gang activity in Guatemala, and you think about, you know, the uncertain political situation, even in Mexico now, yeah. People don't need much of a push to realize that there might be a better life and somewhere else. And taking a risk becomes easier when you're less and less comfortable in the situation that you're in. And that goes back, Dean, to what you said before. You know, Democrats talked about investing in countries in Central America so that and trying to stabilize their governments. Go back a couple of generations, you know, and you get the Sandinistas, and you get the interference of the Reagan administration in terms of, you know, one person's freedom fighter is another person's terrorist, and all of that. Do you think there's a legacy of that that goes back to the 80s in those countries and our relationship with them and our ability to have an effect on their economies?
Yeah, I mean, there have been various times in over the last 40 years or so where we've kind of more or less tried to invest in those economies and to help with whether it's dealing with gangs or the drug trade, to try to make it more palatable for people to want to stay in their home countries. And it's just been very difficult. I have a friend who has family in El Salvador, and for a long time it was really, really dangerous to travel down there. And it's getting a little bit better now, but there's been a real kind of an authoritarian crackdown on the gangs in El Salvador. But the crime's a little bit better there, but just incredibly dangerous. I had a family member who worked for an NGO in Central America, and they traveled with private security all the time whenever they went out into the countryside. It's just a very dangerous place. Plus, there's not a lot of economic opportunity. And so, I'm talking about Central America, but we also have the South America people coming up much further for the same kind of a lot of political instability in South America, economic issues as well. So, yeah, I mean, you know, this feels in some respects, things are a little bit different, but there are these kind of through lines over the last 30 or 40 years in terms of economic opportunity, and then also the issue of personal safety.
Yeah. And I think as we wrap up, Dean, you know, there is a strange paradox here, isn't there, that we are in a period where we're finding it very difficult to hire people. The labor force seems really tight. And I can say that as an employer of people, I would be more than happy to have to fill, you know, some of the hundreds of vacancies that I have in my organization with anybody from anywhere that you could train. And yet there is this pushback against able-bodied people who are coming into the workforce. And I've never really been able to understand that. You do hear sometimes people saying, you know, they're coming and they're taking our jobs. Not really, right? They're right. Coming and they're doing the jobs that perhaps longer-term American people don't really want.
Yeah, you hear that all the time. They're coming here and they're taking their jobs. And no, they're they're mainly taking jobs that a lot of Americans don't want to do. I mean, think of that road crew that was up on the Key Bridge in Baltimore.
Exactly.
When the bridge collapsed, they were all came here from either South or Central America. I've seen many interviews with farmers and people who own manufacturing facilities where they say we could not function without foreign labor to help us either do the crops or run the assembly lines or what have you. So that's just kind of part of the sort of political mythology that goes along with a lot of the kind of the underlying kind of culture war, racial war that goes hand in hand with the politics of this.
Yeah, and we're right in the middle of it. And everybody says it's never been this bad, but you can bet your bottom dollar it's been this bad.
Still got a few more months to go before the election, so give it time.
Yeah, absolutely. Dean, thank you so much again. This was a wonderful conversation, and hopefully we can catch up again and see if they've fixed it in 6 months. No, I'm just kidding.
Sure thing, Peter. My pleasure as always.
Thank you very much. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye, everybody.